Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is writer and poet Martha Solano. And we're talking about her latest collection. This one we call Ours. Now, before we start, I want to read a message from Martha, because this is going to be a little bit of a different interview. She has a lot of difficulty speaking, and this is the reason. And this is Martha's words. The deal is that in November 2023, I was diagnosed with ALS. I know something was going on with my body in early 2023, but it took at least 6 months to wend my way from doctor to doctor to doctor to neurologist. When I first found out I was terminal, I did everything I could to pretend it wasn't true, that this couldn't be happening to me, aka magical thinking. In early 2024, I could still walk 5 miles, but then it dwindled to 2 miles, then 1 mile, then a half a mile, then no walking at all except around our home and to the front yard to sit on my trusty chaise lounge where I birdwatch, look up at the sky, and watch and listen to songbirds. For a while, thanks to a daily dose of amphetamines, I was able to spend a little more time on that chaise or in my bed for hours, writing and revising poems, reading books about the natural world, and doing way too many crossword puzzles. As I was coming to terms with my diagnosis, I used poetry to make sense of what was happening to me. Poems that combined the daily challenge of living with a neurological disorder with the medical, the metaphysical, the cosmological, along with the wonders of the plants and animals that I'm grateful to engage with daily. Today, I am no longer writing poems or doing much revising due to the vibrating neurons in my head. But somehow, I still am talking, garbled as it is, swallowing food, and finding reasons to smile and laugh. I'm grateful I was able to write a book of poems about my journey so far with ALS, and it's going to be published by Acre Books in September 2025. But even more, I'm grateful to be surrounded by loving and caring family and friends, especially my partner and my two amazing kids. Hope that helps. For Martha. Martha, welcome back to the show. It's a pleasure to be able to talk to you.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mark. I'm thrilled to be here.
I'm glad to be able to talk to you. I think this collection of poems is my most favorite, if that's a thing to say. I found the poems really passionate, pissed off, which I really liked, wistful, sad, and it really sums up a lot of the anger and sorrow many of us are feeling at the moment, especially people connected to the natural world. And I have to imagine that you feel that way too.
Well, I started the book in late 2019 to a 1/9. I was at a writing residency in the Oregon desert.
Wow.
It was so inspiring. It's called Playa, P-L-A-Y-A, because it's on Lake Playa. And I got from their board of directors and person who was orienting us that there was hope. But I found I had to write the poems that don't have hope, and also write the poems that share the beauty and wonder of nature. So they helped me sort of, I was going to go on a hike one morning, and I thought, what are you doing? Sit down and start this book. And it probably has one or two poems from that day, and
wow.
I did write the winter poems there, and the winter section, there are a couple poems but every poem pretty much was replaced. But it started there, so it was kind of a 4-year journey.
Wow.
To get it done. And it started getting some finalists and nibbles, and I thought, no one's going to take this book.
Martha, come on.
Really, I had a friend, Michelle Batista, who's a wonderful poet, help me finish it. I really felt like she got it to the last step.
It's even got a beautiful cover.
I know, David Hightone, he's amazing, and we have lots of his art in our house. He's based in Seattle, but represented all over the world. So we were thrilled to get his cover on.
Now, typically on shows where I interview poets, I ask the poets to read the poems. Obviously, in this situation, that would not really be a great thing to put poor Martha through. So I'm going to read the poems. Now, I have to tell you, Martha, I didn't get any sleep last night because I was so nervous about it. Well, you know.
You're reading them better than.
Yeah, right.
That's,
yeah, it's, I've never had to do this, read a poem right in front of the author. So.
No, don't feel that way at all.
Well, you take a break. You take a break for a minute, and then
and then
listen. I'm going to read What is Beautiful, What is Sad, What is Apocalyptic. The dahlia leaning over the fence like a scraggly pink mop. The foothills at dusk. Grapevines at peak production. Ms. Castor, 52, running down the road, her dog in her arms. Ms. Castor, cigarette dangling from her mouth. This is not how I want to die. That this is the time of the year to plant fall bulbs. Amaryllis, Dutch iris, red velvet, and African queen. Rescue workers digging through foundations, searching for charred bones. Whew. The president blaming forest management. Fire as sunset. The kind that makes you run for your camera, share on Instagram. Shades of orange and purple. Pink bursts. That 90 minutes after it was spotted, it grew each second by a football field. That it was like nighttime in daytime, hell on earth. Black beauties, tiger lilies, dance ballerina dance. It looked like the sun was coming up, but we were far past sunrise. There was this moment of, oh, that's odd. That's not good. That some fled with important documents and mementos, that some fled in cars that ran out of gas, that some fled their cars, ran into flames. Retirees in mobile homes, deeply wooded cul-de-sacs, winding roads. That in a few hours, the fire had grown to 22,000 acres. That by early evening, it was 55,000 acres. That in one day, it had traveled 17 miles. Many stopping to jump a battery, give a pregnant woman a lift. No one knew what effing time it was. A friend telling me that she planted 100 stargazers, another putting in daffodils. And what we saw at pleasure, what a name right now. White specks swirling in the wind. I wish I could tell you they were snow. That's it for that one. That's a powerful, the last two lines really kill me in that poem. And for people who don't know, you've obviously, like most of the West, have been dealing with huge fires for the last several years, part of the problem with global climate change. We just started to have fires here in Massachusetts.
Oh, wow.
Nothing on the scale of what you've been through, but for us, we've never had this before. And so these fires are starting to spring up all over. It just started because we haven't had any rain, or substantial rain, in the last couple of months. And so all the fallen leaves are brown, and we're getting our first fires. The thing, I want to talk about your poetry, because it's the thing that all attracted me from the beginning. And I want to mention for everybody to hear this, you were the very first poet that I interviewed on the show, Inquiry, because I was focusing on visual artists and science, people in the sciences who write about science. And I interviewed Langdon. And he and he was about his mushroom book. And after we were done doing the interview, he said, you know, Martha has a really, is really interesting. I think you would find her really interesting. And Martha, I have to confess this to you. I was skeptical. Now, it's not that I don't love poetry. I just had this vision. If I do one poet, I'm going to be doing a million poets because there's so many of them. So I sort of like went, oh, let me read your poetry. And then I realized you were the perfect poet for me in this show. You're the only poet who would write Neodymium in a poem.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot to me. I was an English major and stayed an English major in college, but the second 2 years, I took all science classes pretty much, and my teachers didn't know what to make of me. I abandoned English. I had all the requirements, and I did field biology and plant taxonomy, and I was in the lab, and I was so happy. But I didn't want to be a scientist. I wasn't sure. So then I knew I wanted to teach English and write poetry. So I got my master's in fine arts did it.
It's weird, though, Martha, because when I read your poetry, first of all, not only did you write in a very intelligent way about the natural world and everything about the natural world, but you also write a lot about cosmology. I mean, in this book, there are things about black holes. And I get the real sense, like, you have a passion for the study of the universe.
Yeah, I really do. And since I've been slightly more sedentary, I'm only reading nonfiction about Earth, the cosmos, butterflies, everything I can get my hands on, and also about climate change and extinction. And I still love it, even though I know I probably can't write anymore. Like a pig in mud.
I'll tell you, though, you sound a lot better than I thought you would. And doing interviews like this, you're really getting your message out there. I think this is one of the people who are concerned about things like science and nature and climate change. This is a great collection. It's really powerful. But as I mentioned, I was so surprised, because I have a passion for physics and cosmology, too. So I was really surprised that you read a poem about counting black holes. And you know what? The first thing, because you also mentioned music a lot in these poems, and I'm always interested when artists do that, because a person's musical choices tell you a lot more about them than maybe even their poems. So I was relaxed that you said, I was really happy that you mentioned Lana Del Rey and and Snoop Dogg.
What?
Snoop Dogg, Martha.
Oh, my daughter turned me on to her, and I became a Lana fan fanatic. Now I'm so nostalgic when I listen to Lana. It was an era for me, like 2022, you know, I still listen. But that song about America.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she really is a political lyricist, and people miss it.
I have a funny story about
Lana. My heart is breaking.
I have a funny story. Last Christmas, I asked my four grandchildren to get me a CD of the music they were listening to then, right at the moment, last year. And so a lot of it was pretty typical for me. So, you know, it was the usual stuff. But my second eldest granddaughter picked Lana Del Rey's first CD.
I'm in fucking Rockwell.
And I was like, oh, my God, I didn't realize you had that going on in your head. That was
That was the one that my daughter got me hooked on. She said, Mom, she mentions Frost, Robert Frost.
Yep.
Sylvia Plath, other writers. And so she kind of lured me in that way. And then I was hooked. And I love every song now. But it's, you know, I listened on my paddleboard when I was a fiend for my paddleboard. So it was hard to listen at first. But now I'm just grateful for those years of how active I was able to be. And I've made peace with it. But I do love her.
I'm going to, you're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is writer and poet and Lana Del Rey fan, Martha Solano. And we're talking about her latest collection. It is great. This one we call Ours. Martha, I'm going to read you another poem so you don't get exhausted. You're talking an awful lot.
Thanks.
Okay. Here's Lana doing paleontology. She does cosmology, she does natural history, and she also does paleontology. During the Cretaceous, our country was divided for 60 million years by an inland sea. The fissure was 2,000 miles long, 600 feet wide, and 2,500 feet deep. On the left side, Laramidia. On the right, Appalachia. Back then, the landscape was recognizable to both sides. To both, clams were the size of small area rugs. Turtles as big as Dodge darts. Both agreed Elasmosaurus had a streamlined body, paddle-like limbs, a 23-foot-long neck. If a Ginsu shark swam past, both would laugh about how it got its name, its ability to slice and dice. No one argued whether Hesperonis, a cormorant-like bird chowed down whole by mosasaurs, was flightless or not, whether it used its bill and teeth to hunt down bony fish. Maybe because unity depended upon a baseline of shared reality. All agreeing shark teeth are shark teeth, crinoid lilies are crinoid lilies, that a fish's jaw cannot be fungible, that you can't swap out a toothed tongue for a smooth one. On both sides of the divide, dinosaurs roamed. On both sides of the earth was earth, the landscape recognizable to the creatures on either side. No one on the left side, no one on the right side rubbed their eyes and said, nope, nope. No such thing as a plesiosaur. No such thing as a coccolithophore. The schism was literal, not figurative. Caused by subduction, one plate colliding into another, at the end of the Cretaceous, the sea dried up. Now the seas is all the middle states, those who voted red and those who voted blue. Where the sea was, the chalky remnants of sea of bivalves, their shiny pearls.
A heavy sigh.
I know.
After yesterday's.
Oh, God, don't. Okay, let's make a deal that neither of us are going to start that. Because if we do, we'll go down the crapper.
I wrote this poem. It took, you know, many attempts and got it wrong many times. And I had to do so much research. And it was really fun now. But at the time, I didn't know how this poem is going to get written, but I had this idea about the sea, and I just went with it and learned about all the critters back then.
I love the whole idea of that vast inland sea. I've actually done an interview with a paleontologist who specializes in fossils of the inland sea. It must have been amazing to have this sort of incredible body of water right in the middle of where we live now.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I had a friend yesterday, my friend Tina Kelly is a poet. She was in Upper Michigan, and she said she found fossils everywhere.
Wow.
From when it was the sea. And it's amazing to think what our Earth has been through and survived, although it's never dealt with us.
Yeah.
In our, you know, burning of fossil fuels. But it is an absolutely amazing planet we live on.
It is incredible. It is amazing. When I go out and to look at birds, is the reason I give myself for going out. But I look at everything. And I'm always amazed that just even in a small area, how many different things there are that are living in one small spot. About a decade ago, I had to do a breeding bird atlas. And required you to stand in one spot for sometimes several hours to watch a bird breed. And there was a big patch of a rat of goldenrod below me. And I ended up watching that whole ecology of the goldenrod, where there were the ambush bugs, and then there were the spiders, the crab spiders that looked like goldenrod on them. And it really gave me an appreciation for how deep everything goes, how many things there are. It's mind-blowing.
To be able to do that, Mark, to have the appreciation is such a gift. I feel so fortunate that first my father gave me excitement about the stars and moon and, you know, and it started there, and I had a backyard that I was so fascinated with the caterpillars.
Oh, yeah.
And their life cycle. And as a kid, you know, I was in the suburbs, but I got so much from just being outside, observing what was going on. And then I would chase the moth, and, you know, it was incredible for me as a kid to just not have, you know, there was no internet. We had to go outside and figure out what the hell to do with ourselves. And I feel so fortunate.
Yeah.
And in college, I learned all these varieties of goldenrod. I didn't know till I looked under a spotting scope, and I saw they were all different.
It's amazing.
And I was like thrilled.
Well, you know,
to learn that.
It's incredible that doesn't happen as often as it did when we were. I'm much older than you, but it just doesn't happen anymore. I mean, all young people are too busy with things online, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that, but I grew up with the same thing. I grew up in the city of Watertown outside of Boston, and we were very close to the Charles River, which was polluted at the time, but there were still things like snapping turtles and other stuff down there. And I got to watch herring runs and smelt runs on the river, and that was just incredible to be able to grow up and to have seen stuff like that. Now I live in the city of Worcester, and in the city, but we have like turkeys in our backyard, wild turkeys.
Oh, that's wonderful. I have gotten to see those. I've seen wild turkeys, and it's always a thrill.
Well, I have a tiny backyard because I'm in the city, So I have bird feeders up, but when the turkeys move in, it's like having a dinosaur move in because they're just huge. And they really get demanding. They'll like start calling, and like when they see us coming downstairs, they rush to the door, and then we throw stuff out for them to eat. But you have a great poem in this collection about pine siskins.
Oh, yeah.
I love those. And you actually capture the call of the pine siskin perfectly. To me, it already sounds like a zipper going up. What birds come into your yard?
Oh, thank you for asking. I'm sitting on my son's, well, he doesn't live here anymore, but I'm off his old bedroom on his deck, and I saw a crow. I joke that we live in Crow Nation. But yesterday I saw a cougar dog. Hold on.
Well, Martha, you know what? We're completely out of time. I'm amazed you last the 30 minutes, the half hour. My returning guest tonight, and it's always a pleasure to talk to her, is writer and poet Martha Solano. And we've been talking about her latest collection, and I've been reading some of it. This one we call Ours. Martha, it's been a real pleasure.
Oh, this has been wonderful. I'm so honored to get to talk to you, Mark. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Hey, you wrote the poems. They're amazing. This is your best collection yet.
Oh, thank you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.